This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, want to buy a Mac cheap?
If you want to buy a new Mac and you don't want to spend too much money, why not consider buying a refurbished Mac from Apple or from Cancom? It's as good as a brand new one, and you'll save a packet as well.
Chris Finn with the details of buying a better-than-new iPod or Mac, and the fine details of iPhone pricing plans.
It's very much a case of the customer being strong. Know what you want to pay, know the product you want, and don't let them upsell you to a contract that you're not happy with.
All you need to know about the iPhone 3G tariffs and which one is right for you. All that and more on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello again, everyone. I'm your host, Brad Gibson. With economies tightening and wallets thinner than ever, it's more important to save more money when buying a Mac or iPod. So can you find a bargain on a Mac at places other than eBay and the Apple Store? Well, the answer is yes, but the key is knowing where to look. Mac Format Deputy Editor Chris Finn joins us to review the finer points of finding just the right Mac at a bargain price. Hello, Chris.
Hey there, Brett.
Chris is going to give us some of the great tips found in a four-page story in the July issue of Mac Format entitled How to Buy a Refurb Mac. And Chris, I've almost given away the secret in reading the title of the article, but you're going to give us all the details. So there is a great place to find good Apple equipment at a better price, right?
That's right, and it's the Apple Refurb Store, or indeed any Refurb Store. If you go to store.apple.com/UK, that link's in your enhanced podcast now, go to that link. At the bottom right of that page, there's a little section called Special Deals with links for refurbished Mac and refurbished iPod. And you can click on that, and there's a whole bunch of refurb Macs on there. Now, what's a refurb Mac? It's a refurbished Mac. It's a Mac that, for one reason or another, has been either returned to Apple or Apple's otherwise got its hands on that they've cleaned down, checked, repackaged, and are making available to you. The great thing about a refurb is that, at least in theory, it's actually gone through more checks than a brand new Mac has, because if it's been out to a customer and they've returned it for whatever reason, the faulty components are replaced, if there are faulty components, and it's tested and tested and tested, and then shipped out to you. It's fantastic, and you can really save a lot of money.
Well, tell us about that. What kind of prices are we talking about here?
Well, it depends what you're going for. One of the bad things about buying a refurb is your choice is limited. You can't just pick and choose exactly the Mac for you. But for example, let's look at, there's a MacBook 2.2 GHz Core 2 Duo on there that I'm looking at. Originally, it would cost £829. Refurb, £639. That's 23% off. There's a black one, which is 33% off. There's an 8-core 3 GHz Mac Pro, 47% off, down from $4,675 to $2,499. So, I mean, that's a huge saving.
But Chris, what's interesting about this is, and I want to make sure people understand this, this is not end-of-line equipment that's no longer for sale as new. It's brand-new equipment, right?
Sure thing. It's brand new, or it might be like one or two generations behind, but hey, you know, that doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things when you're saving that amount of money. But you're right, it's not sort of old, tatty, low-power stuff. It's very current stuff, and there's quite often X-serves on there as well, you know, really, really high-end computers on there as well. Very, very powerful.
Now, this is not the kind of equipment that's going to have scratches and dents on it, right?
If you're very, very unlucky, you might find some minor cosmetic blemishes on the Mac. Put it this way, I've bought refurb Macs and I've never had any problems at all. The one thing you might find that's a bit bashed up is the box. The box itself might have been sent from, you know, manufacturer to distribution to customer and then back from customer back to a shop and then back to Apple. So anyway, the box might be a bit bashed up, but the Mac will be fine.
Now, what about the warranty?
You get a full warranty, a full one-year warranty, 12-month warranty, exactly as you would with a normal Mac. So you're not losing anything that way. It's not as if you're buying a Mac, you're getting a sort of 90-day limited warranty or anything. You get exactly the same warranty as you get with a brand-new Mac, because in essence, it is a brand-new Mac.
Okay, now you've mentioned Mac refurbished equipment and some of the sample prices, but you can also buy refurbished iPods too, right?
That's right. I mean, going to that same link that I gave you before, store.apple.com/UK, down at the bottom right of the page, refurbished iPod link, click on that. There's a whole slew of iPods on there. The savings are fantastic. Again, half price iPod Shuffle. I'm looking at an iPod Nano here that is 24% off, £129 down to £99. So you, again, save a lot of money on an iPod.
But Chris, I can buy used equipment on eBay. So why buy refurbished equipment instead?
It's a much more secure way of buying a Mac. You get a warranty. You know it's been checked. You know it's legit. Buying on eBay, I'm not saying that everyone on eBay is a shyster, but you've got to be careful when you're buying on eBay. When you're buying privately, you've got to be careful. And there's no guarantees, and there's no warranty, and there's usually no warranty. So buying official refurbished goods is fantastic. Bear in mind as well that Apple's not the only refurb dealer. You have, for example, Cancom, which has its own refurb store as well. It's an Apple-authorised refurb store. So you've gone to cancomuk.com. Again, that link is in your Enhanced podcast now. And you can click on that link, go to Cancom, and they'll be able to sell you refurb as well. So even if you can't find what you want at Apple, have a look at Cancom and see what's on there.
What can you do with the money that you've saved?
One of the best things, actually, to spend money on with a Mac is RAM. RAM is the one thing, the one single easiest way to upgrade your Mac. And RAM's dirt cheap. I mean, we're talking sort of 30 quid for a couple of gig of RAM for Mac Mini, let's say. One of the more astute investments to make would be in AppleCare. AppleCare is Apple's extended warranty.
Right.
And what it does is it extends your 90-day telephone support to full 3 years, and it extends your warranty from 12 months to a total of 3 years, so you're getting an extra 2 years of warranty on top of that. So if you're at all worried about refurb, buy the AppleCare. We're talking maybe £129 for an iMac or a Mac Mini, and you've got that peace of mind. I've now started buying AppleCare for my laptops because I've had problems with Apple laptops, and I just think, well, I'm going to spend the money. It's £200 for a MacBook, and I've got that warranty in place. And bear in mind, even if you have one single repair over the length of that extended warranty, it's likely that that warranty is going to pay for itself over those 3 years.
Okay, now earlier you gave everybody, and we gave them the Enhanced Podcast link to the Refurb store, but there's also a widget that you can download as well that can automatically pop up on your Mac and show you all of the Refurb prices automatically and instantaneously, right?
Sure, it's at www.refurb-store.com. Again, link in the Enhanced Podcast. You can go to that, download that widget, and it will show you the current deals on in the Refurb store, the Apple Refurb store. It's a great way of keeping your eye on a bargain. So if you've got your eye out for, let's say, a new laptop, just keep that in your dashboard on your current Mac so that whenever you activate dashboard for whatever reason, there's the latest prices from the Apple. So you can have a look at that. See something you like? Go buy it.
Okay, so refurbed equipment, the safest way and the cheapest way to buy a Mac.
Sure thing. It's a really good way to spend some money on a Mac. There's no reason not to buy one. And I've bought a few refurbed Macs, and each one's been a cracker.
Okay, Chris, thanks so much for going over the pros and cons and how to find refurbed Macintosh equipment. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brett.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of Mac Format. The 4-page investigation entitled How to Buy a Refurb Mac begins on page 20 in the July issue, which is on sale now. As we release this show, we're just days away from the release of the iPhone 3G on the 11th of July. We've talked a lot about the second-generation iPhone on this program that was announced last month. It now uses 3G technology, so web pages load faster, it's got built-in global positioning capability, and now you'll be able to download applications, both commercial and shareware, just like you do on your Mac. But while there's a lot different about this phone, there's even better news for those in the UK when it comes to iPhone pricing plans. The phone is cheaper at £159, and with some tariffs, it's free. Also, there are 4 pricing plans instead of 3, and now you can get the phone on a pay-as-you-go plan as well. So with so much fine print and plans, what should you know before walking into an O2 or Carphone warehouse store and signing up for an iPhone 3G? Rob Barnes is the mobile phone expert for the pricing comparison site MoneySupermarket.com. He used to work for the mobile phone industry and knows their techniques. I recently spoke to Rob and got his valuable advice on what you need to know about the iPhone 3G. As you look at these packages, what do you think about them?
Well, I think O2 have made some good progress here, ultimately. The old tariffs weren't particularly strong. These are slightly stronger at the top end, so the £45 and £75 a month tariffs do offer good value when you compare it to other networks. My main concern is the £30 entry point, though. For 75 minutes and 125 texts at £30 a month is really a very poor offer, to be fair. I think that's more of a PR job at sort of offering a reduced price introduction to a contract for the O2 iPhone.
Do Do you think that that lower price plan is that drop-off point that they're trying to grab people to come into a monthly plan that might be looking at pay-as-you-go and then go, the difference is not that much, I might as well go monthly?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think on one hand, it's a good PR piece, which is you can buy the iPhone from £30 a month rather than £35 a month as it was. And you're quite right in saying that from a trying to convert people from pay-as-you-go onto a contract, £30 a month is the average sort of price that a UK customer would pay for any form of contract. But the minute that that customer looks at the value included there, they're probably going to be turned off. I think my opinion would be that they've pitched it very much as an upsell. So the salesperson in the store is obviously going to say, well, you can have it for £30 a month, but I'd advise you move to £35 a month because you get so much more value. And I think that's what's quite cunning about the tariffs that they've brought out.
Okay, so let's look at these plans. They go from £30 all the way up to £75 with free phones. So how should a consumer view these plans and then decide which one is right for them?
Well, the first thing to do is obviously match your own usage with the price plan. So if you don't use 3,000 minutes and 500 texts a month, there's absolutely no point signing up to it because the difference in price over 80 months is sort of £500. So if you've got an average usage of 600 minutes and a couple of hundred texts a month, you may be better off just looking at the £35 a month tariff,
right,
paying the £99. So it is all about your usage.
I'm personally looking at the £35 plan as well as the £45 plan, and I don't really think I'm going to use that many minutes in the £45 plan. So I'm going, I might as well just pay the $159 for the phone instead of $59. It's going to be a better deal for me.
Definitely, because on an 18-month contract, that's £180 over
right.
duration.
So right.
You're actually better off paying the $99 or the $159, definitely.
Now, in looking at these monthly plans, what do you see as the pitfalls or the things a consumer needs to be aware of?
Well, the main thing, as ever, is identifying the right plan for you. So you match your existing usage or what you think you're going to use on a monthly basis and buy the right plan. Don't be driven by the price point that says, I'm going to save a little bit of money. You'll pay in the long run. Ultimately, the most important parts of these, though, any calls made outside a bundle are charged at 20 pence per minute. So if you sign up and think, I'm going to save some money and go for the £30 a month option, if you make an hour's worth of phone calls over your usage, you're going to be hit with over £100 worth of calls, potentially, and texts, because texts are charged at 12p. So those costs outside a bundle, you could really rack up some high prices if you don't sign up to the right thing right from the start.
Now, this is a good point to bring up the bolt-ons. These are O2's additional unlimited things that you can add on, such as unlimited text, unlimited calls, that kind of thing. Should people be looking at these bolt-ons? They start at £7.50 each.
Yeah, the bolt-ons are really good product, to be fair, from O2. They've been doing them for a number of years. The best value one, I think, is the unlimited text for £7.50 a month. That's superb value. I use a hell of a lot more text than I use voice minutes, so that would be perfect for somebody like myself. Ideally, what you could do, say, is think, well, I'll sign for the £45 a month. There's not really that many texts with that, so rather than upgrading to £75, which gives me no text benefit, I'll just sign up for the £7.50 extra, pay just over £50 a month, and I've got a really, really strong price plan there.
Now, if I wanted to go back later on, and this is the fine print, Rob, that we've been talking about, if I wanted to, say, in 2 or 3 months, add a bolt-on, can I do that and then a couple of months later drop it?
Yeah, you can normally add and take away the bolt-ons. I think the minimum period of time you can have them is 1 month. It depends on the specific tariff you're on, but normally you can chop and change. That's the whole point of the bolt-ons. You're not locked into a long duration on the contract. So you can pick and choose. If you're not using it all, drop it. If you think you're going over your usage, then bolt something else onto the contract.
You know, Rob, people need to realize this is a major financial commitment. I mean, an 18-month contract at even the cheapest plan of £35 means that you're locked into paying at least £540. That's a lot of money. So it's important to look at the fine print. As you look at the details of this contract, what do people need to be aware of?
Well, to be fair, the contract itself is a fairly stock-standard contract. Some of the pricing is slightly higher in terms of out-of-bundle usage. But the contract is a good duration. I think O2 could have tried to drive a 2-year contract, but they've settled on the 18-month because that offers fairness, and also the warranty is tied in for the duration of that contract, as I'm led to believe. So I don't think there are any major pitfalls to it. It's just making sure that really, am I driven by the marketing voice in my head that loves Apple, or am I making a financial decision, which is ultimately, I need a phone, I need this amount of usage, and I need it to do this, this, and this. Now, my opinion is that the O2 iPhone isn't the perfect phone for everybody. There's equally good products out there, like the M95, for example, and the M96.
Right.
It's a case of, do you love Apple enough to fork out all this money? If not, from a personal point of view, I would actually choose a better quality phone that's got better camera, that's got better video capability, and not be driven completely by just the brand.
But if you're going to be surfing the web a lot, it seems to me the iPhone 3G versus the other phones you've mentioned, like the Nokia, is a much better experience. And that probably, if you're going to be doing a lot of web surfing, that's probably a good or the best alternative. Do you agree?
I'd completely agree with that. There's no reason to buy the iPhone unless you are going to do a lot of web surfing. Something like the N95, yeah, it's got a smaller screen. It's certainly not touchscreen. The user interface isn't as strong. So from a usability point of view, specific for web surfing, it's perfect. You cannot knock it in any way, shape, or form. It's just to make sure people buying it are buying it for that purpose rather than I just like the look of it, because as a telephone, there are better handsets out there.
Now, in this 18-month contract, if someone wanted to change within that period, are they liable to carry on paying the original monthly price of the plan until the end of the contract?
Well, it's normally dealt with on a case-by-case basis by the network. So normally you wouldn't be able to do anything within the first 3 months in terms of dropping down a tariff. You could certainly upgrade from one price point to another. Normally between 3 and 6 months, you have an opportunity to downgrade your tariff. But again, it's very much dependent on the network allowing you to do that. So for one customer on £75 a month wanting to go to £45 a month, O2 may say yes. But the same customer saying they want to drop from £35 to £30 a month 6 months down the line, they may not want to do that. So there's no hard and fast rules to this. It's very much dependent on what the network want to do.
Now, Apple is no longer getting a take of the monthly tariffs on or airtime from the carriers. They're only making money on the phone itself now. So that means that carriers like O2 are now in full control to set their own tariffs and conditions. So if I wanted to walk into an O2 store or call them up and say, look, I want a better deal and I only want a 12-month contract, not an 18-month plan, do you think there's a better chance now that you can haggle with O2 on iPhone plans?
It's a very good question. I think it will be driven by the success of the sales. If O2 are selling everything out, then there's no reason why they would offer anybody a discount. I think the issue here now is that the product is now a standard subsidized handset and fits in with the same model. So you've got as much chance of negotiating a deal on the iPhone as you have negotiating a deal on an N95. Normally, I would say you've got very little chance. Maybe 6 months down the line when sales may be slowing up, when they want to shift some stock, you may see some better deals. But traditionally, it's very difficult to get a discount from day one when you sign up.
So, Rob, we talked about bolt-ons a minute ago and a lot of other things that a salesperson at O2 or Carphone Warehouse is going to try and sell you on with this iPhone 3G. One of them is going to be an insurance plan in case you damage the phone or you lose the phone or theft or whatever. Is that a good deal?
I think you've got to weigh up the pros and cons of the deals on insurance. Normally, I wouldn't advise taking up a high level of cover on a lower-end handset, but the iPhone is A, very expensive, and B, very attractive to thieves. So what I would advise is, firstly, before you purchase, actually check your own home insurance. See whether you're actually covered on that or whether you can add the handset to your home insurance. If not, then yeah, in this case, I would actually advise to take some kind of mobile phone insurance cover out. Maybe not directly from the shop. There's numbers of branded and unbranded covers available online. Some of them start from sort of £3-4 a month. In store at O2, they'll probably ask for upwards of £5, maybe £10 a month. So you could save a bit of money by shopping around there.
Now, a recent Channel 4 dispatches program, which you were in, reported that some stores can earn hundreds of pounds in commissions for signing you up for a contract and steering you away from pay-as-you-go plans. I mean, this seems to be a real scam in the industry of trying to convince consumers to go monthly. What advice can you give on that?
It's very simple, to be fair. Unless you're spending more than £25-30 a month on top-up, then there's no point whatsoever going through onto a contract. the important thing to remember is, do you actually need a contract phone? If you hardly use your phone, you may as well just stick with the pay as you go. If you're spending sort of 10, 15, 20 pounds a week on top up, then you'd be rather silly to stay on that, and you should really move to a contract. So it's very much about personal choice, but don't be harangued into buying a contract if you don't want to, and then you have to commit to something long term. So it's very much just thinking, what do I need? What do I use the handset for? Is there any point in me signing up to a contract? And most importantly of all, am I going to be able to control my spending if I do actually sign up to a contract?
In addition to O2, Carphone Warehouse is also going to sell the iPhone 3G. I mean, Carphone Warehouse has been criticized over the years for some heavy-handed tactics when it comes to trying to sell people mobile phones. What should you know about when walking into a Carphone Warehouse and buying an iPhone versus an O2 store?
If you know what you actually want to buy, then there's no issue with going into the Carphone Warehouse or into O2. From a personal point of view, I would probably choose to buy directly from O2, because then I don't have to deal with another company if I have any issues with the warranty or any issues with the tariff. Carphone are not a bad company in any way, shape or form. Yes, they do have some aggressive selling tactics, but so does the rest of the mobile industry. It's very much a case of the customer being strong. Know what you want to pay, know the product you want, and don't let them upsell you to a contract that you're not happy with.
Rob Barnes is the mobile phone expert at moneysupermarket.com. He spoke to us from London. A Spotlight-like task manager and a handy contextual menu item are the two shareware picks today for the month of July. And Craig Grinnell joins us to go over two great products. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Brad.
We've got two great products. The first one is Dejumble from Thinking Code Software Incorporated at Dejumble.com. You can also get to it through our enhanced podcast link. It's $19 or 10 pounds. I've seen lots of task managers on the Mac, Craig. What makes this one different?
Well, for me, it's all about the interface. If you've got a task list and you want to figure out what items you've got to get done, having a good interface is really imperative. This one is menu bar based, so it's available system wide, but you can also tear the app from the menu bar if you need to. It's kind of apes Spotlight for filtered searches, so it's very, very quick to look through your list if your list's getting a bit long. And it's also pretty intuitive to use regarding adding items, sort of adding them to groups and that sort of thing.
Now, I like to order my tasks by date, so does Dejumble support that?
Well, it does, and it also supports various other options as well for displaying tasks. Mm-hmm. So you can restrict the list to today's stuff if you really, really need to hone down on those jobs that are really urgent. Usually it also shows stuff that's past due if those deadlines have whooshed over your head. But there's also a setting for like a three-day view so you can see what's coming up. Also, you can determine whether items are displayed in their groups or as a flat list, so it's actually quite flexible in that regard.
Yeah, very flexible. The Dejumble website mentions iCal access. How is this feature and how does it work?
Well, it's made a reasonable start at this, but it is one of Dejumble's kind of weak spots. You can use the prefs to import events and to-dos from iCal, but Dejumble events can only be then sent to iCal's to-do list and not to its calendar, which kind of isn't exactly the way that I like working, but I'm sure it will be fine for some users. Also, deleting an item from one app doesn't necessarily reflect this change in the other application, which I found a bit awkward. However, it's kind of early days for this yet, and it is, you know, good to see a task manager at least enabling you to have some sort of parity with iCal to actually bring events in and spit them back out again, because most of the stuff doesn't actually do that.
Okay, 4 out of 5 stars. You wrote that it's somewhat quirky and a little unpolished, but efficient and flexible enough for most users, which is a really good review of where this product really stands. It's got a ways to go, but it's really good where it is today.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's kind of a little bit different. I'm kind of fed up of stuff that is too massively basic.
Right.
You know, this sort of thing where they've stripped it back so much that you just can't do anything with it.
Right.
I think there's a lot of potential in this app. You know, I don't think I'd recommend it to everybody, but it's shareware. You can download the demo. You can play around with it for a bit and see if it's the right app for you.
And you can also check out the tutorial about the Dejumble on page 60 in the July issue if you want more information there. Okay, let's move on to our second product. It is Move CM. It's donationware from limitpoint.com. You can get to it through our enhanced podcast link. This is a contextual menu item, Craig. Now, we don't usually feature these, so what's special about Move CM?
Well, I have a little admission to make on this, and in the sort of macOS 9 days, I used to be big into contextual menu items. You know, I used to use tons of the things. things. As of Mac OS X, I've not really used them that much, but this one is just really astonishingly useful. It's really, really handy to have. Very basic, really. It enables you to rapidly move, archive, copy, or alias a selection in Finder to a folder from a list that's defined in MoveCM's preferences. These are housed in system preferences. And it's it just makes moving files around really, really fast.
Now, does that mean that you have to go back into system preferences each time you want to add a new destination folder?
Well, for quickly adding a whole bunch of folders via drag and drop, that is really the best way. But if you just want to add a single item, you can use the Add To feature in MoveCM's contextual menu. And usefully as well, if you invoke the contextual menu over something you've already added, it gives you the option to remove it. So it's pretty flexible in that regard.
Sounds great. Okay, are there any other features worth noting here?
Well, it's a pretty simple app, but there is one really interesting little thing they've done, which is called Put in Place. And what that enables you to do is associate extensions with specific folders, so it's, you can throw items around your system even more quickly.
Now, you gave this a Mac Format Choice Award 5 out of 5, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, usually I don't go ape over stuff like this. Contextual menu items are a bit less useful than they used to be, and they've sort of been ghettoized on Leopard as well.
Uh-huh.
But this one's just too good to ignore. It's one of the very few apps of this sort that's taken up permanent residence on my Macs. I don't think it's going anywhere. And I think it's really, really good value as well.
Now, you note that it's donationware. What does that mean in this case?
Well, like most shareware, you download a trial version. However, this author hasn't actually set a specific price, so you basically pay him how much you think the application is worth. Thing is, in this case, that's also a little bit different to most donationware, because this guy enables you to unlock a whole raft of other little tools that he's made. And many of those are really useful as well. So, you know, you pay for this app, whatever you feel it's worth, and you get a whole bunch of other applications too, which are equally as good. So it's really astonishing value for money.
Yeah, it really is an astonishing value, 5 out of 5, and it's really worth it just to kind of play with. You like it, pay for it, get more features. It's really fantastic. Okay, MoveCM and Djumble, two great shareware products from Craig Grinnell in the July issue. Craig, thanks so much. We'll see you next month.
Yep, see you next month.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware for MacFormat magazine. His July picks begin on page 100 in the July issue of MacFormat. Able to jump Mac Pros in a single step, able to recover a lost file in a blink of an eye. Our trusty soothsayer of solutions, Trevor Middleton, is back to perform incredible miracles before your very ears with
Questions and Answers.
Oh, sorry, am I on?
Yes, you are on. I just wanted to do that. The problem now is that you have a lot to live up to on this hype. You've got to really perform on this show. You realize that, don't you?
I'm tap dancing. Can't you see?
Exactly. All right. Let's get right into it with the incredible Trevor Middleton. First of all, you can send us your questions, and he'll do his best to answer those to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Question one comes to us from Jeffrey Oselstein in Doha, Qatar. He wrote, I have three Macs, including the new MacBook Air, syncing through .Mac. The problem that I have is that I can't get the calendar and the Air to sync properly. When it advises of inconsistent data and tells me to reset, that doesn't solve the problem, and I just get another error message advising of inconsistent data. Is there a way to restart the calendar from the beginning, or even simpler, is there anything else I'm doing wrong that I can fix? I am concerned that by clearing all of the data and trying to sync, that it would just erase my data in other synced Macs. Trevor, what's the problem here? What can he do?
Okay, well, first of all, Jeffrey, there are two answers to this question, and that depends on whether you're listening to this before or after July the 11th. After July the 11th, .Mac becomes a new service called Mobile Me. More importantly, the way that Mobile Me synchronizes your data will be very, very different. Items such as new contacts and calendar appointments will automatically be pushed to your other devices from the Mobile Me server. Whereas at present, of course, we're pulling the data off by initiating a .Mac sync. So in theory, Mobile Me's way of syncing data using the push method means no more inconsistent data. In the meantime, if you're listening before July the 11th, now I think would be a good time to sort out your data. And I have the same problem as you. I have a number of Macs and a mobile phone, and what I've found useful is to appoint one of the Macs the master machine on which I sort out all the inconsistencies of data, phone numbers, that kind of thing. Then, if you go into the .Mac system preferences pane on the master machine, click on sync, followed by the advanced button, you can reset your .Mac data with that from the master machine, and then sync the other machines from the .Mac data. Essentially, you're using the master machine as a push server, which is what Apple will be giving us all, thank you, after July the 11th.
And it really is going to be fantastic come July 11th. I'm really looking forward to it because I'm a .Mac subscriber as well.
I've seen the demos online, and it looks very, very good. So I'm looking forward to having fewer inconsistencies of data after July the 11th.
Absolutely. Andrew Allport of Australia sent us our second question. He writes, I was wondering if there was a Mac program that recovers passwords for encrypted archives or documents, like .rar or .zip, for example. I have some old archives hanging around, and I've forgotten the passwords and would like to try and recover the contents. Also, is there a way to write a script that would do the recovery? Trevor.
Okay, well, Andrew, there are loads of password recovery programs for Windows, but I've not yet come across many specifically for Mac OS X. So if you have any PC using friends, or indeed if you're using Windows on your Mac, you could try one of those out. Or if you're into building your own applications, knitting your own yogurt, there is a site called sourceforge.net, which has some open source programs. In fact, it is the place to go for open source programs. And as I say, if you're confident about building an application from source code, you could build your own application there. If you're not, I've downloaded the source code for an open source password recovery program, and I'll compile that into a Mac binary for you, and we'll see if that does the trick. On scripting, of course, you need a scriptable application, but yes, you could write a script that would use the password recovery application. Otherwise, if you're doing a brute force attack on a password, you would need to have an Apple script running for, a long time, shall we say, probably a greater time than the universe has left. So we'll stick with the standard software for now. Brad.
And our final question is from Wendy Dunn of Derby. She wrote us, I want to install the software for my new mobile broadband dongle, but I've forgotten the administrator password and I have the only user account on the Mac. Trevor, help her out here. This is a problem a lot of people probably have.
It's a problem I see a lot. Simple question, quick answer. If you can't remember the main admin password for your Mac, you can reset it. What you need is the Mac OS X installation DVD, either the one that came with your Mac or one that you've bought afterwards. Insert the disk, restart your Mac, and while it's bonging, hold down the C key until you see the spinning gear wheel appear on the screen, and you can take your finger off the C key. Once the installer starts, just click through the options until the menus appear at the top of the screen. If you're using Leopard or Tiger as an installation disk, choose Reset Password from the Utilities menu, choose the name of your account, and you can then reset the password. Quit the installer and restart your Mac. Oh, and by the way, whatever you do, don't reset the password of the account named root, as this is the main admin user with privileges over the whole system. So you can seriously mess things up if you reset the root password. Make sure it's your own account. Brad.
You have lived up to the hype very well, Mr. Middleton. Thanks so much for helping us.
Thank you very kindly. I should tap dance into the distance.
All right, that sounds good. That's questions and answers. If you would like to ask some questions yourself, you can send them to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Rob Barnes, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Saklaropoulou. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us again for our next edition on Monday, the 21st of July. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.